Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome to a special Grand Final Week edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Mick Warner, back with Glenn McFarlane, who's been an admirable feeling, a sensational feeling, I should say, Mac, since Robbo went down. You're the medical sub, and we will talk about the big Grand Final. It's been a long wait, but there is a little bit of news around to mop up Carlton mainly and a little bit of Collingwood. Mac, what's your assessment of Carlton now that Alistair Clarkson has finally said categorically that he's not interested in going to the Blues?
Yeah, it's been fascinating, Mick, hasn't it, to watch the Blues. Think about that last game and the sacking of David Teague that seemed to take forever, and it's almost seemed to take forever to get Alistair Clarkson to finally put that that final offer of no to the, you know, to bed. Brian Cook obviously contacted him over the weekend after getting the CEO's job, and that's been the best thing the Blues have done so far, is to get Brian Cook on board. But Clarko is definitely a no. We know that Michael Voss is heavily in the frame, has been heavily backed to be the man to take over, to get that second chance he's desperately been chasing. So it's got, hopefully the Blues, speaking to a few Blues sources, they're really hopeful that they can get it wrapped up by perhaps even as early as next week. You need a coach, Mick. We're into trade period really soon, so you need a coach. But it has been a shambolic period for the Blues, but all I can say is that if they can come out with the right man and they can come out with the right CEO, hopefully they can turn this footy club around.
There were a lot of people who were adamant, and I think you're right in what you've assessed, that up until Monday morning, perhaps Clarkson was a chance and was exploring it, even though it might have been a long shot. And I think it has come as a little bit of a surprise, as a bit of a jolt to some people at Carlton, and certainly the supporters, that he isn't going. Do you think that Luke Sayers, the president's tweet when they landed Brian Cook, that Carlton is a destination club, stacks up? If at the end of this, the only big name they get is a CEO, I'm not sure how many goals Brian Cook can kick for them. I know it is a big coup, and he's a highly respected person, but you know, if they get a second-tier coach like a Voss or someone, does that justify the destination club aspect?
No, I think it doesn't. And that's what says to me that when Luke Sayers put that tweet out on Saturday morning, that he still clearly thought that that Alistair Clarkson was a chance to take the job. And I know that certainly some people at Carlton absolutely believe that there was a chance that that he could have played the job. Now, Brian Cook, you would know this, of course, Mick. He played four games with Melbourne, 1977. Played with Subiaco, 25 games with Subiaco, and also played a few games with East Perth. You're talking about goals. He only kicked the one goal in that game. So he may have been a backman cookie. I'm not sure, but he won't be obviously playing for the Blues. But I think the line on the destination club, that, you know, that line that that Luke Sayers has put out there says to me that they really thought Clarko, they could swing Clarko's mind and obviously pay him what is, you know, next to a small fortune, and then, you know, get someone like a Jeannie Pratt to sort of pay the tax that would need to be paid on that. I think Michael Voss, if he is appointed, is a good selection, but he's not, you know, he's been desperate to get a role. He was so angry with Carlton a few years ago when, you know, they basically teased with him and then gave the job to David Teague as well. But I'd love to see Vossy get another job, because we'd want to see whether he can actually cut it. He made the finals in that first year at Brisbane, and then it all fell apart after that. So not sure about the destination club just yet. What do you think?
And they hired Fev, and they had a pretty good list, didn't they?
They did.
And then it all went to hell in a handbasket. So David Teague goes to Richmond. I think that Damien Hardwick sticking up for Teague at the time was a good play, because he is a highly regarded assistant coach, and a bit like Vossi, I found out at Brisbane, being in the driver's seat is a different kettle of fish. But the Clarkson thing is fascinating in that he guaranteed pretty much that he would return to coaching. So for me, that opens up the Gold Coast Suns as the most likely option for him and his management to do a deal with the AFL, which would be worth a small fortune, but you know, Carlton supporters, I think, would be content in the fact that they know that it's going to be a well-run footy club. Just on the Collingwood aspect with the Jeff Brown versus Mark Corder situation, there was a big board meeting last Tuesday. There was discussion in that board meeting that maybe Peter Murphy could be a replacement for Mark Corder to try and thwart Jeff Brown. My understanding, Macca, is that peace talks are going on this week, but if there is no resolution by the middle of the week, maybe Thursday, Francis Galbally, the former club solicitor, will lodge those papers for an EGM. So remember, Ross Lyon said that Carlton was more stable than Collingwood. I'm not sure which way he put it, but both of those famous footy clubs have had a lot of upheaval, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Absolutely. And just on the Clarko point you made before, it might not just be the Gold Coast Suns when you look at it. What Clarko has put on the table is that he will coach in 2023. So you'd be nervous if you were Stuart Dew. I mean, he was already probably nervous because he'd be a great pickup for Gold Coast. But you might also be nervous if you're Kenny Hinkley and things went wrong the wrong way with Port Adelaide next year, or Chris Scott as well, because he's coaching in 2023. He made it very, very clear. And just on the Pies, isn't it amazing that these two famous footy clubs are sort of, you know, half been in a situation where they've been able to tear each other apart. So really, both clubs need a bit of stability. You talk to someone like a Lee Matthews, as you, I know you do, and also to Mick Malthouse, and they say the most important thing for a footy club is not your coach. It's not your list manager. It's the stability in the top office. And you've got to get that right. So once these clubs start getting it right, maybe they then start getting back on the pathway to success. Because, you know, the Blues, it's been a long time between drinks for the Blues, and likewise for the Pies, it's been a while. So hopefully there's a little bit of resolution. With the Carlton stuff, Mick, is there any EGM situation there, do you think? Or do you think it'll go quiet now?
It was interesting that Luke Sayes said that he welcomed the democracy, and then they've rejected the election on legal grounds, sort of nitpicking through the fine print of the requisition that was put. I don't like it. I've told you all year I can't stand the roadblocks to democracy in football clubs. They're member-based organisations, but really the members have no say. Like-minded people just say, this is how it is, pay your membership. Well, same applies at the AFL commission level. We've got to get some democracy back, but it'll never happen. And that's just, unfortunately, the way it is. But look, Carlton would want to have a good year, wouldn't they?
They would. There's a lot of pressure on them, and there'll be pressure on the coach, whether it's Michael Voss or whoever it is. There'll be pressure on that coach because that list is good enough to play finals. There's absolutely no doubt about that. You look through that list, it's not a superstar list, but, you know, if they can get an Adam Chera and you know, they're not really losing anyone of note other than a few retirements here or there. They should be playing finals. Collingwood, it's a longer way back for the Pies. As good as I think they've been able to do in terms of getting a team around Craig McRae, it's going to take a while list-wise. But you make a great point about the members. Who's kept these footy clubs afloat through a global pandemic? It's the bloody members. And it really irks me that the members don't have enough of a say in footy clubs. And also at AFL level, that really, really irks me. And it's something that I thought would change because of the pandemic. But you know what? It doesn't look like it's going to change, Mick.
No, it doesn't. Now, we mentioned the trades. We're going to talk about them in the last segment of our podcast. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about the grand final. You do realise that there is still a competition that is played around all this politics, Macca.
I do, Mick, and I prefer that much, much more than the politics.
Macca, it was fascinating to see Clarko sort of when he was on AFL 360 with Dimmer Hardwick, which, by the way, to see those two absolute freak coaches, you know, seven premierships between them, talking about the grand final was great viewing. And Clarko was of the view he didn't necessarily think the best two teams of the year had got through at various stages. We all thought Geelong maybe, or Port Adelaide, or even Brisbane. But as it is, the Doggies and the Demons, who I think were both 6 wins, 0 losses. I'm interested in the betting. I know we don't like to talk about betting, gamble responsibly, Macca, but Melbourne $1.65 and Bulldogs $2.25 is not the way I'm reading it.
No, I agree. You know that I don't gamble. My wife listens to this podcast. She listens to this podcast, so I do not gamble, and I do not subscribe to gambling, but I do have an occasional flutter here and there. I think you're right. In every grand final, I reckon there's a team that starts favourite, and the secondary team always gets backed in a little bit late. I think the Dogs are a huge chance. I'm going to tip Melbourne, but I do think this is a real flip of the coin game, partly because I disagree, and far be it from me to disagree with Alistair Clarkson. I think they've been the most two consistent teams all season, other than the Bulldogs slip up late. They had a bit of a slip up late. So I'm going to tip Melbourne to win this game, but I really think the Dogs are a chance. A lot of those guys have been there before. They've been on the big stage where it's a little bit more awkward for the Demons there. And you look at it, it's heartbreaking, to be honest, that this game's not at the MCG. I heard Kane Corns say that Perth Stadium's the number one stadium in the world now, and that's, you know, I cannot subscribe to that. I love the MCG. I can't wait for the grand final to be back there next year. But it is heartbreaking that these two great Victorian Melbourne clubs are, you know, their fans are going to miss out on seeing it. But to be honest, one club has won one flag in 67 years and the other one's won zero in 57. So there's a little slice of history. You know that I'm attracted to a little bit of history there, Mick. So I think it's going to be a cracking game and it could go either way.
I feel like if the Dogs are right in it at half time and they don't let Melbourne get on those runs where they, you know, they can put teams to bear. We know they did it late in the game against Geelong, but, you know, if they can put some doubt in the Melbourne minds, they can start the Bulldogs the way they did against Port Adelaide. They won't, of course, because there's no way that Melbourne will be inept and allow that sort of smashage. Is that a word? Smashage around the stoppage.
But you can say that in grand final week.
But, you know, I think that I know it might be a bit cliche, but the start's going to be crucial, because if Melbourne can get on top, you know, they probably are the better team. But I love the Bulldogs midfield. I think Melbourne are a bit more even across the ground. But that moves me on to the Norm Smith. I mean, I love Norm Smith. Can we call it betting? I like plucking a winner. I've got a formula.
Yeah.
Macca, I think you need to kick multiple goals to get the nod from judges. It goes right back to the sort of Shannon Grant days. If you can snag two or three, you know, who was the Swans player that won it in 2012?
I'm trying to think now, isn't it? I'm trying to think exactly who it was now. I'll find that out for
you.
But I'm fascinated.
It's the winning formula. Kick.
I'm fascinated by Norm Smith. Yeah. It is fascinating, though, when you look at the Norm Smith betting. I reckon often there's only about 10 blokes that can win it. That's why I think it is very much a betting proposition, because there's not that many players that can actually win it, Mick. I reckon. Are you a bit the same?
Hang on. You were a judge the year Brian Lake won it. Now, you wouldn't have had him in your 10 before the game, would you? So there goes your theory there.
First 35 before the game.
Did you give him the three? And tell me what it's like to be a judge of the Norm Smith.
I did give him the three. And to be honest, it was – I got told about 3 weeks out that I was going to do it. And, you know, I'm thinking this is a slice of history. I remember – this is how old I am. I remember the very first Norm Smith medal being awarded. And I remember there was a little bit of controversy. No. He was the first in a losing team. It was Wayne Harms, who was the great nephew of Norm Smith. So there was a little bit of sentimentality there.
Was that the year before? That was 81, wasn't it?
So that was 79 that he won the first Norm Smith. And just when I meant to say it before, I had it on the top of my tongue. Ryan O'Keefe was the guy in 2000.
Ryan O'Keefe,
Who almost went to Hawthorn the year before, wasn't it? So in 90. I think Hawthorn and Carlton, there were a few clubs that were interested in him, because he ended up beating Hawthorn in that grand final. There was a couple of clubs there. So I remember the first Norm Smith. And when I was told, you've got this opportunity to do it, I thought, this is a great opportunity. What if I stuff it up? That was in my head. So I didn't sleep for 3 weeks. I initially said no. You'll laugh at this. I initially said no. I don't want to deal with the stress of that. I'm happy to have my votes in the paper. And I was told in no uncertain terms, you will never be asked again if you say no. So I said yes. And then for 3 weeks, I woke up dreaming that I'd picked the wrong bloke all the way through. Absolute.
That's unlike you to stress over anything, Macca.
You know me, I stress about a lot of things. And then it comes to the day, and then we have one of these ridiculous grand finals where the midfield, and the week before, Sam Mitchell had something like 40 disposals in a preliminary final. And I thought to myself, this is what I just want, someone to have 50 disposals, the greatest certainty ever. This could be an easy one. And
Simon Black style.
Yes, Simon Black style. What do you have, 38 or 39? So with that, I basically went into a game and the midfielders were terrible. Not terrible, but no one stood out. And the two guys at either end, Jack Gunston and Brian Lake. And in the end, I went Brian Lake with my three votes and I went Jack Gunston with my two. I think I might have even gone David Mundy with one as well. So I can't believe that he was $81. And we're not allowed to bet. You've got to sign your life away to say you don't bet or look at betting and stuff like that. And I've never been more relieved in my entire life when they got up and they announced that Brian Lake had won the Norm Smith medal. I felt like I'd at least got it right anyway.
Well, I'm still waiting to judge the Norm Smith medal, and I'll be waiting for about 1,000 years. But I famously remember a story where there was a senior reporter who must have had a wager on the Norm Smith, and there might have been some judges in the box, and this person kept saying how well Joel Selwood was playing, just sort of trying to
Well, it is funny because it is funny, and he was a senior, very, very senior reporter,
gee,
wasn't he?
Selwood's playing well.
Yeah, gee, oh, he's got another kick. Gee, look at that tackle there. But taking people into the press box, it is a weird place. We don't go there very often these days, and it is really weird that in the last quarter of the press box in a grand final, the talk is, you know, particularly if the game's done and dusted, all the talk goes on the Norm Smith medal, and I feel really sorry for the guy sitting in there. I remember sitting next to Jay Clark through the 2016 grand final, and he was giving votes, and it was one of probably the hardest grand final to give votes in.
In hindsight, it was Tom Boyd's medal.
It probably was, but on the day, I didn't necessarily think that, Mick. But looking back on the game and stuff like that, but I don't know that I'd ever do it again. It's I know a few people. I might be able to get you to do it next year. Would you do it?
I don't think it'll be happening, Macca. Just quietly, but no, I'd rather not do it. But I like to have a bit of a wager on it, and I haven't quite narrowed it down.
Who's your man today? Who's your man this week?
No, I'll have to come back to you after the last break on that. I need to have a quick look at the formula.
Very good.
But someone who can snag a few. Let's talk about the game a little bit more. The two coaches, you know them both, Simon Goodwin, Luke Beveridge, come from different sort of, Goody was a superstar Hall of Fame player, 300-game player, premiership player. But Bevo is the more traditional, battler player who was just a hard ass and became a coach. Tell me about your dealings with both of those gentlemen.
Yeah, I've certainly had a lot more to do with Luke Beveridge than I have with Simon Goodwin. And maybe that's because, Luke was, carving his career here as a player when I was reporting here and I wasn't in Adelaide, but had a lot to do with Luke and there's a small connection there, and it's only a tiny connection that his grandfather and my grandfather played in the four in a row Collingwood premiership teams. And his grandfather was an absolute superstar player, and we know his dad was a great recruiter at St Kilda for over the years. But I love the fact that they do come from completely different pathways. That, as you said, Goody was a star, Bevo wasn't. Goody was, pretty much not pigeonholed, but he was thrown into a coach's role. But he had the great assistant pathway through and was always potentially going to be a senior coach, whereas Bevo had to go to the amateurs and had to build his way up. And if you speak to a few of his teammates, they said they never thought he'd get to AFL standard. But he, as a tactician, as a master coach, he's done an amazing job. Like, he wins a premiership in what? Was that his second year at the Bulldogs? After, they'd almost fallen apart when they lost, Ryan Griffin and Brendan McCartney gets sacked. And so I really respect both of these guys. Goody was gone at the end of last year in a lot of people's eyes, Mick. And Gary Peart did a review of the Melbourne Football Club. And that review said, he spoke to 43 people within the club both the players and the administrators and the staff. And he was convinced that we've got the right coach. We've got to put the right people around him. And they've been able to do that. And he's not only saved his job, he's guaranteed, potentially a long career. He might have even guaranteed, immortality in a sense that, you think the last man to coach the Melbourne Football Club to a premiership was Norm Smith all those years ago in 1964. So I think they're great stories, these two coaches, because they're great storytellers, and that's what Bevo is. Bevo is an amazing storyteller. So can't wait to see what sort of tactics we've got sorted out for these two guys.
I love the story that Mike Sheen said when he ran into Simon Goodwin at the Sorrento pub over summer and said, "We can play a bit of golf soon because you'll be sacked." He said, "Sacked, we're going to win it." And in hindsight, love that word, but geez, he would have known he had a lot to work with. It just needed to click. And one of the things that did click was that Glenn Bartlett was moved on in round four, the president, and Kate Roffey had the pleasure of interviewing her and Kylie Watson-Wheeler, the Bulldogs president, two female presidents, so guaranteed another female president. Very impressive, both of them. And, the interesting thing with Goodwin is that, the board really said to Simon, he's not unconditional, but, the alignment, I think, at Melbourne, you talked about before, that the stability, the pillars of the club with Max Gawn, Goodwin, Kate Roffey, Gary Peart, who I was skeptical. I thought it was a boys club-ish appointment, but they have done a tremendous job, Melbourne, and hopefully they can win it for the long-suffering fans. But I think it's a bit closer than that betting market suggests. Just before we get on to the trades, I want to ask you quickly about the Brownlow medal. I'm surprised that everyone's been slagging it off, that the umpires shouldn't vote when... Wasn't Ollie Wines the outright favourite and Ollie Wines won the medal?
He was. He was the outright favourite. And the second favourite and third favourite ran second and third. So I do tend to shake my head a little bit in regard to that. And we always say, it's the midfielder's medal. And Mick, it is the midfielder's medal. There's no question about that. But look at the other awards. We do the same in the other awards. So I'm a traditionalist in the sense that I love the mystique of the Brownlow, that we don't know what these umpires are going to do. And generally, they don't get a lot wrong. You wouldn't have argued with Ollie Wines winning. You wouldn't have argued with, Clayton Oliver winning or Marcus Bontempelli winning. And they were up there in the top three. So I can't see where the problem is, Mick. Can you?
No, I can't. And look, we're going to go to a quick break. But just quickly, the umpires for the grand final. Matt Stevich, who's probably regarded as the best, Roseberry and Mollison. Let's go for a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the trade period, one of your areas of expertise. Macca, of course, your 35% of your work is Moneyball, the trade periods, the silly season, the mass movement of players has begun. I loved the Robbie Tarrant coup, by the way, to go to Richmond to replace David Asprey. I thought that was a pretty good move. I didn't even realise that he was available. But these are the sorts of things that are going to be happening. I don't think we're going to have superstars moving, not that I know of, but it might be these types of trades that we get set for as the grand final finishes and we get into trade period and the draft.
Yeah, it's a good point, Mick. I think it's a good move for Taz in that sense. I think the Kangaroos had a feeling that they'd offered him the year and were almost prepared to go to the two, but I think they had a feeling there was another club in the wind in terms of Robbie Tarrant. We think that Jack Zeeble will stay now. They were the two guys who the two free agents that were sort of the end of their time and trying to work out what's going on. I think it's a good move for Tarrant. I think that it's going to help Grimes a little bit, I think, Mick, as well, really. Just adding a little
Bolter
bit there as well.
Yeah.
And Bolter and the like, isn't it? So I think it's really going to help the Richmond defence. He's a fair age, Taz, but, he missed a lot of footy in that period. So I think he's still got a couple of years to go. You know what I really was impressed with yesterday? Mm. Your world exclusive about a young cat, Quinton Narkle, who Ralph Carr did tell me earlier this year that were five or six clubs into him, and you were able to break the world exclusive that he signed a one-year deal to stay with the Cats.
You know my thoughts on the word exclusive. I despise the word exclusive, and I've probably had it on a few stories in my time, but I just, there's something about it that grates at me. So I'll send you a message, Macca, my world exclusive. Quinton Narkle, though, he's a talented emerging young player. He's only 23, and like a lot of kids at Geelong, he can't actually get a game, a consistent game. I think he was medical sub 5 times this week. The Bombers are into him, and he's the sort of guy, you know, maybe Darcy Parrish is the wrong example because he's a different sort of player, but, you know, he just needs to be given a whole season in the team, and maybe that's what's going to happen at Geelong. Geez, there's a bit happening at the Cats.
There is. Yeah, they're fascinating to watch, the Cats, with the assistant coaches going, and what happens with some of those older guys is fascinating. But, you know, and we're looking at the younger guys. You really want the younger guys to get a chance. Like Jordan Clark thought this was the year that he was going to, you know, potentially break out and really make his mark for the Cats. He's had a chat to Fremantle, you know, about the potential to go home. He's contracted. We'll wait and see there. And you also had a line on Nathan Kruger sort of weighing up his future, you know, with Collingwood and St Kilda being interested there. So it's a real turning point for the Cats, I reckon, with Steve Hocking rolling into the club and already making an impression there as well. Whether they get through the summer and then sign Chris Scott on a longer-term deal, or you wouldn't think he's not gone into a season on the last year of a contract since he's been there. So that's going to be a fascinating watch to see whether he gets re-signed prior to the start of the season and whether the kids are given some guarantee that they're going to get some game time.
Is he out of the frame for Carlton?
Well, that was one that keeps coming back when you think about Brian Cook. All we can take him at his word, and all we can do in this sense is take people at their word, and we try and do that as much as we can. That he said his phone will be off. The one thing about, you know, obviously Brian Cook's got that connection with him there as well. So you always think about those lines. But the one thing about it is that I wouldn't have thought you would have seen the assistant coach changes at Geelong if the Cats were aware that Chris Scott was going to leave. So it's still a watch this space, both with the Blues and with the Cats. But all we can do, as I say, Mick, we try and people have a crack at us, but we try and take people at their word, don't we?
What about the Scott Pendlebury situation? Is it correct, I saw it reported, that he's been offered 2 years? Now, I think that he should be a one-year, a rolling contract player myself with his age. But is it right he's got two?
Well, yeah, it's been reported that way as well. So I'm surprised that he's got 2 years, to be honest. I love Pendles. He's one of the greatest Collingwood players I've seen. But I just think to someone like Sam Mitchell, who basically played, certainly at Hawthorn, the last 5 or 6 years of his career, or 4 years of his career, on one-year deals. I'm not sure why there is the need for a two-year deal in that sense. And, you know, who's to say that he won't play those 2 years? But, you know, he's already said that he doesn't want to play anywhere else. He'll play at Collingwood until he then moves on to another club to be an assistant. So I'm surprised that you'd want to give him 2 years. I think Collingwood would have been better, you know, to just say, look, mate, you're here as long as your form's good, and we'll give you a 1 year and we'll fix it next time round. So I'm a little bit surprised by that, to be honest, Mick.
All right. Now, Macca, let's get your grand final winner and Norm Smith. I've had a little bit of time just to think about my formula, and it's actually pretty obvious who the goal kicking midfielder is. That's Christian Petrarca. So I know he's the outright favourite, but if he can jag the 3 or 4 that he usually kicks and dominate in Melbourne win, he's the obvious one. And I do think Melbourne will win, but for some reason I'm leaning towards, you know, when you sort of pick a team, I'm a Richmond supporter and I don't really care who wins. But when you sit down and watch, you always, I do anyway, decide who I want to win this game. And I find myself emotionally leaning towards the Dogs. And maybe that's because my old man's a Bulldog supporter. Probably is. But I'm not sort of, you know, maybe it's just the evil side of me, Macca. I'm not really buying into the Melbourne fairy tale as much as some others.
You're an evil person, Mick. You know that. And you've got to live with your conscience at stages, I think. I still can't work out if your dad Bulldog, you know, why you chose Richmond, to be honest. But I never had a choice. I don't even remember. I was brainwashed into a cult very early on and wasn't able to get away from it. So this is a really weird grand final for me, because I always go into a grand final clearly favouring one team. I reckon only once in history, I reckon I've switched in the middle of a game and wanted another team to win.
One?
I think it was
in the middle of a game. What?
Yeah. No, I think it was this is a long time ago. I think it was 1984. I got swept up in the. I was wanting Hawthorn to win in 1984, and there as a young kid, and got swept up in the Sheedy emotion of all these amazing moves Sheedy made in the last quarter. So I sort of switched my allegiance.
That
in that
can
game.
Happen. Now point, you mention it, it can happen. You barrack for the underdog.
You do.
Even and it's late in the game, maybe.
Yeah, you do, 100%. I know how much you were barracking for the underdog in 2018 as well, which still, you know, is heartbreaking for me. But I in this particular instance, I'm torn between these two clubs because I love the Western Bulldogs. I think one of my favourite days ever in footy, in covering footy, was the 2016 grand final and also the day after at the Witten Oval, which was, you know, emotional and the like. And we've been lucky, Mick. We've had fairy tales all the way through. We've had, you know, 2005, the Swans break, a massively long drought. You've got Richmond, you've got Bulldogs, you've got, you know, teams that, you know, and that's why I'm sort of half going to tip Melbourne by a point. I'm going to be sit on the fence a little bit and tip Melbourne by a point with Clayton Oliver as my man. I love watching Clayton Oliver play footy. He's a star. You know, I reckon if you're going to have a bet, you can get at the first clearance in the grand final, I'd be taking Clayton Oliver in 100% every situation. So I think the Bulldogs can definitely win, though. But I'm torn between these two clubs because my heart's with the Bulldogs in a lot of ways. But I've done a lot of Melbourne stuff in recent weeks where speaking to the, you know, the Steins family, and I tracked down the 1964, the 11 of the 13 surviving members of 1964. I visited Ron Barassi 2 weeks ago. So I'm torn, and I love the Demons and the history side of this Demon. So I'm going to tip the Demons by a point with Clary to win the Norm Smith.
Very good. Well, that's equalisation, isn't it? Not a lot of what the AFL do I like, but the equalisation pushes is presented an opportunity for clubs to, if you, what you said before, get the pillars right, you get the right people in your clubs, but the AFL, the distribution of money and the draft and these things, it makes it possible for the Bulldogs. I mean, they would have thought we'd be talking about the Dogs maybe winning 2 flags in 6 years in Melbourne. Yep. You might have swayed me a bit there. I think those supporters deserve it, don't they?
They do, and that's the beauty of footy, Mick. And I think you're so spot on about that, the equalisation of things. There was a stage there when I never thought the Bulldogs would win a flag, desperately wanted them to. There's a stage that I thought Melbourne would never win a flag. You know, 25 years ago last week, Melbourne were almost merged out of existence. The Bulldogs were almost merged out of existence against their wishes back in 1989. So I think it's great to see these two teams in there. As I say, it's heartbreaking it's not at the MCG, but let's enjoy it, let's celebrate, and let's party afterwards as best we can back here in Melbourne.
All right, Mackerel, you've been magnificent on the podcast this year. If we go on next week, I'm not sure whether we are yet or not, but thank you for filling in for Robbo. Do you want to have another crack next year?
I don't want to push Robbo out of a job. We're looking forward to getting him back. And the great news is he's starting to get fit and healthy again. I'll certainly have a crack next year if you want me, as long as I don't have to host.
Now you can host and do it with Robbo.
You're trying to get yourself out of another gig. Is that because this is not a paying one?
No, good on you, mate. It's been a great season and maybe the biggest fairy tale to come. We'll talk to you next year.
Thanks, Mick.